listening to a podcast of Living Faith located at 51 North Market Street, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, a community of faith, love, and hope.
When I was asked if I would share, there's two things that came to mind. I want to give you kind of a map where I'm going with this. One was what God has been teaching me. And secondly, I haven't heard this too much lately, and hopefully I wasn't reading too much into it, but testimony of how I came to faith. So I started going to church when I was about 4 years old, and I'd say before that time, my only real understanding of what going to church would be like was on TV. On TV, I remember seeing, you know, this pastor or priest up front, and they had like the robes, and they were very scary looking. And I had no desire to be in that kind of environment. So it was my uncle's sister lived down the street, and niece lived down the street, and she would take my brother. My brother would come every other weekend from, we had the same father, different mothers, and he would come every other weekend, and she would take him up to church. So my brother sat me down, we shared a bedroom, and he decided he wanted me to come with him at 4 years old, and I told him I was too busy to go to church. In reality, I think I was scared of what I saw on TV. I was scared of, I had no clue what I was getting myself into. And it seemed like it was an hour or two, or he was just telling me, well, why? I was like, I'm busy. Doing what? I like to play with my toys, and my toys are cool. And I guess I just eventually just caved in. I said, I'll go one Sunday. So my next-door neighbor was a retired missionary for Child Evangelism Fellowship. Before they had their building in East Petersburg, it was out of her basement. I'm not exactly sure what it meant to be retired, because she didn't really stop after she retired. I guess she just wasn't raising funds to be a missionary anymore. She just did the work. And she would go up, we went down, and there was these mini pews all throughout the basement, and we sang songs on these huge cardboard, I guess, what do you call them, kind of like what we see on the screen, but they were just on cardboard. And, you know, she used all the latest technology, like flannel graphs. And I'd say within 4 weeks, she had this little Jesus up there and how he came. And I thought he did a lot of cool things. And then I realized he died for me. So, you know, she did the sinner's prayer, and I asked Jesus into my heart. And the thing about the sinner's prayer is you can pray, you know, whatever you want, but if you're not, you know, if you don't believe what you're praying, it doesn't mean a whole lot. I think at that time I believed what I was praying. So after we would sing and she would share with us, we always went into classrooms. And I would go with my brother because I was fairly new. And it wasn't too, and I loved it. I sat down, I had my little Bible. We did a song, and I think everyone prayed. But soon after, I remember I became a Christian, they realized I probably shouldn't be in. My brother's 4.5 years older than me, so he was in first grade and I was four or five. So they put me in this nursery, and there was no story, no Bible reading, and we just played with toys. And I thought, these toys are stupid. My toys were a whole lot better. So I guess you have to have a reason to come, and to play with toys that were not as nice as my toys wasn't good enough reason, and I stopped going. And about 7 or 8, a couple years later, I started going back. All I could say is I had this appreciation for God. I was saved, but there was kind of three different me's. There was a me at school, the me at church, and the me at home. Me at home and at school were kind of, for the most part, the same. Me at church was, you know, I was well-behaved because for whatever reason, I guess I was afraid that if I got home and there was a bad story about me, I'd get in trouble. But came about junior high, we had a youth leader, youth leaders, the Kensingers, and they owned Circle K. And they really challenged me in my faith that these three me's could be one me. And I started making some changes, and by the time I was in senior high, I started going on some missions trips. And I counted them up, I went on 4 missions trips. I went to Puerto Rico, I went to Jarza, North Carolina, I went to Costa Rica, and my last one I went to was New Mexico, and we worked with the Navajo. Navajo were really cool. They are the best people at coming forward for an altar call, because 1 week you could have an altar call about Jesus, next week you could have something about a different religion, and they'll come forward for both. And I think that's where we are in America a lot of times, is we take this as fire insurance, and maybe it's real, and I'll do my bare minimum and come, and that's what we're going to do. By the time I was done with high school, I realized I wanted to either be in missions or be in counseling. I was pretty good at listening, and God had been doing some work in my life. So I went to Bible college, and after one semester in Bible college, it was kind of plain that my goal in counseling was not to charge. And I was pretty good about the idea of return on investment. If you're not going to charge, there's no real reason going to college. In my horse view blinders of what I was seeing. So after one semester, I stepped out. I didn't go back. I took one more class the second semester, and that was it. So within the next couple years, I found myself a husband, a father, and a truck driver. Now, as a truck driver, my job was to fill vending machines. And when you have a counseling-minded attitude, it really puts you in a place of you're not talking to anybody. And I had a difficult time with contentment. I, think about the fruits of the Spirit, and there's joy. There wasn't a whole lot of joy. I mean, I could have joy outside of work, but at work, I was, and it was commission-based. So as long as I was making money, there was somewhat happy about it. But as soon as winter came and people bought less soda, I wasn't a happy camper. So, and I worked for Coca-Cola, and it was Coca-Cola Enterprises, CCE, and they joked that it was constantly changing environment. It was what the CC actually standed for. I turned 30 years old, and I was roller skating with the kids. We were public school at the time. The kids were going to LS School District, Megan and Hannah. And I tightened my skates, and it was the best I've ever skated. I skated once a year as a kid at a friend's birthday party at the Overlook, and this is back at Overlook, and I was like, I'm doing really well. So I'm actually teaching Hannah a little bit of how to skate, and I remember putting my one foot, going one way and the other foot the other way, and I heard a pop. So I was out for 13 weeks. They would not let me back until I was released by my doctor. And during that time, the first week was awesome. It was an unexpected vacation, and I felt very productive. After the first week, I just kind of felt like, I can do this tomorrow. I can do this next week. It doesn't really matter when I do it. And I realized that I thought the whole issue was the fact of my job. And I was realizing job was just accentuating it, but it really wasn't the core issue of my contentment. So I decided I was going to try to become a volunteer, because I could volunteer and I could do some of the things that I really had interest in vocationally that I wanted to do. I became a great volunteer. I had the CSN disease. I could not say no. And at one time, I realized that I had 4 positions in Scouts. I was teaching 4th through 6th grade Wednesday nights, and I was a baseball coach. once I got to that point, I was realizing I was starting to burn out a little bit. This was getting to be a little bit much. But, you know, I went through, at my old church, a course called self-confrontation. The idea, make sure foundation is that you're a Christian, then you want to make sure that you're taking the plank out of your own eye before you look for a speck in your brother's eye for counseling. So they asked me during this time an ongoing problem in the area, ongoing problem area, and it didn't take a whole lot of thinking, and I didn't realize this is what I was looking at as the plank in my own eye, was contentment at work. And he said, ask a short description of the problem. So I wrote down, I never wanted to get into the soda business, but they provide an opportunity of employment. My heart has never been into working at Coca-Cola, and almost 19 years later, I'm still there. My heart sinks every year when they make changes for the new year. These changes make it harder on me, and I always want out. Opportunities have been close so that I could move on to another company, but they always fail. And that seemed to be the case. I mean, I remember friends that had gone on to other companies, and they would try to get me in, and that company all of a sudden would go bankrupt. And I was just like, what in the world's going on here? So you put off the old, and you put on the new, the old way of thinking and the new, you put on the new way of thinking. So I went through these steps of how I was going to change. One of those steps was I was going to try to find at least one thing I liked about my job that day. That was somewhat of a hard thing for me to do. Second thing is I found myself going one, then came 2 days a week I had to run up to Reading. And I did not want to go up to Reading because Lancaster was an 8-minute drive to and a 15-minute drive home. Reading was a 45-minute drive to, was up in Temple area, and an hour drive home. So I already did not want to be doing this part. And second thing I was going to do is I got up around 4:15, so I'm on the road at 4:30. I was going to listen to praise music, both to and from, so I had an hour and 45 minutes. And I pretty much listened to two albums. It was the first Casting Crowns and one of Chris Tomlin's albums. And the person who was leading the self-confrontation said, I think you should sing. So let me tell you how excited I was to sing at 4:30 in the morning. I can't say I did it every time, but I did it sometimes. I realized that the basis of my contentment issue was the fact that I did not trust that Jesus was good to me. And that, I think I wrote this down, and I was angry towards God for life not happening how I thought it should happen. So, you know, Hebrews 13:5 says, never will I leave you nor forsake you. So I had been praying that, and outwardly, my job was really falling apart is how Coca-Cola could have went any direction they wanted to. But it wasn't a direction I wanted to be going in. And as far as how I thought my job should be run, it was sinking fast. But I was still trying to praise God through this. And God answered my prayers, and I finally took another position. Now, I'm not a big, huge person for getting up at 4:15 in the morning when I went to Reading. When I first started, they told me, okay, I knew that I drive a straight truck, and the straight truck drivers started later than the tractor-trailer drivers for the most part. So we don't need to teach you how to drive after 19 and a half years. Okay. So we're going to have your training. We'll start at 2:05 a.m. So I thought of this. So I had to go back and, you know, pray and praise God that, you know, my position was different and I was going to go for that. And my contentment level has been really good. I am content. And which is great. It's not as good for the volunteer things I had been doing because that was filling a void. And if you know anything about filling voids in your life, Jesus is the only thing that can fill it. when I was trying to fill a void in my life with volunteerism, now that I'm content, I do not have that same need for it. So I still appreciate when I volunteer, and I still appreciate the opportunities that when I have when I volunteer, but they don't have that same need, so I've actually backed out of quite a bit of volunteering. Am I perfectly content, perfectly joy? No. But God has taught me a lot about when you're at a dark place and you know you're not feeling content about anything, when you start feeling that contentment that you can find only through Christ, you know, I'm pretty happy. I mean, I don't think it was necessarily, the job change was just icing on the cake. The work that he needed to do in my life was done long before that. So when I first heard this about sharing, the first thing that came in my mind was the I Am Second series. If you ever seen that, they go through it at the end. They always say their name and that they are I Am Second. So in conclusion, I can say my name is Steve Lowry, and I am second.
Asked to do this, I was kind of shocked. I've never really been asked to share in front of a large group of people my story. It's a lot more intimidating being up here looking down at all of you than being out there with all of you. But all that God kept bringing back was the word story. And what an amazing storyteller our God is. And it's one of those, I'm sitting here going, okay, God, I can talk for hours. Where do I start? Do I start at the beginning? Do I give them all the nitty-gritty details? Where do I go? And I sat and I prayed. I was up last night just praying, okay, God, where am I going to go with this? And I kept coming back to stories. And my story was never one I felt was worth sharing. And I told Nick this, I think, when he first approached me about it. I was just like, nobody really wants to hear my story. It's kind of boring. I grew up in church. I was saved when I was 6, baptized when I was 7, grew up in a Christian home. My family is my best friend. I don't handle guilt well, so I never really got in a whole lot of trouble. And it's one of those, I remember sitting in youth group, and I would see these kids come up, and they're like, I had all this like heavy baggage, and I was into drugs, and you know all this bad stuff, and they would come up and burn books and CDs, and I'm just like, I don't have any of that, like, okay. And just really seeing that God can take anybody's story, and it's so worth sharing. And that's something God has really been teaching me and is still teaching me, that he has a reason that he has written my story the way he's written it, and it needs to be shared because there are people that need to hear it. And so I decided and landed on the story of how God kind of re-romanced my heart. I grew up in a church atmosphere that was very cold. I was there every time the doors were open. It was very, very strict. You followed the rules, you did what you were told, and nobody looked twice. And I believe I was a Christian. I was saved when I was 6. I know that beyond a shadow of a doubt. And as I got older, I remember looking and just being like, God, I love you with all I am, but I don't love your church. And it was one of those, I quit going for a very long time. I went to a Bible college. It became a class. My Bible became a textbook. And it was just a very cold relationship. And I started at Sight and Sound when I was 21. I think it was 21, 20, yeah, 21. And I remember sitting there one night, and he brought a book to my mind that I remember one of my college friends had. It was called Authentic Beauty. I don't know why it came to my head. I ended up messaging this girl from college I hadn't talked to in years. And she gave me the title of this book, and I was like, oh gosh, I'm never going to find this book. It's this obscure Christian title. So I went looking for it. You know, on the shelf there's one copy left. And I have yet to see it on the shelf since then, because I always go and look. And so I remember reading through this story about this woman and the similarities. Like, we were so different and yet so similar. Grew up in the church, you know, kind of cold. Like, God's here, we're here, and we have prayer, but that's it. And God just used that to kind of slap me upside the head. And it's one of those, like, he wants us in all of our vulnerable, real, raw selves. He doesn't want us to come to him with everything together. He wants us to come to him broken, that we can lay that at his feet. And I remember the scenario she used was actually a wedding night. And she said that, you know, she set up this beautiful picture of a wedding. The bride's there. She's got this beautiful gown. The groom's there. Everybody's happy. They go off together to their wedding night, and he opens the door, and the room's filled with garbage. Every kind of garbage. It stinks, like, to the point you want to be sick. And the bridegroom just looks at it, and he's just heartbroken, because that was the one job that the bride had, was to make sure that that was ready for him. And I remember just sitting there going, oh, gosh. Like, one of those, please, God, don't, like, oh, I don't want to listen to this right now. And I remember sitting there and just going through and being like, okay, we've got to clean out the garbage. This is what God's calling. This is, I really feel this. And I remember going through and just praying, and it was probably one of the hardest and scariest prayers I've ever prayed, and yet the most rewarding. It was, God revealed me the garbage so that I can get rid of it. And I remember just in tears as, you know, things that I had not gotten right came up. And church was a big one. And he's like, if you love me, you love my church. And I remember I was working with Terry Miller, who a lot of you remember. And we were sitting in the booth one day, and it was after that I had done all of this, and I was just in tears at work, and she pulled me aside, and, what's going on? And at first I was like, no, I'm fine. What's going on? And so I just told her everything, that God was just kind of really pulling me, and I was like, I don't even know where to start. I was like, when I go to churches, my walls come up, and I was like, that's not the church's fault, it's my own. And she was like, why don't you come with me? She's like, I go to a place called Living Faith. And so I remember visiting, and I was like, this isn't like any place I've ever been. Okay. So I kept coming, and I kept coming, and soon I was on the worship team, and I don't even know how that happened. I was just there one day, and they're like, oh, go. Okay. And it's just one of those, like, I came through that, and then I was at a point where God was like, okay, you need to step forward. And at that point, I didn't know what that was. So I took that as I needed to go away. And I was gone, I don't know what, 2-3 years maybe, about that. And I was going to all these churches and just didn't feel like I fit anywhere. And so I was going. And I was talking to Terry again. And she was like, well, why don't you come surprise him for Christmas? Because I was leaving to go home for Christmas. And I was like, oh, that would be fun. I miss everybody so much. And I remember I walked through these doors, and I surprised Dwayne and Laura, and I think you guys, I came in, and I was just like, surprise! And I was home. And I remember I called my mom driving home, and I was like, Mom, this sounds ridiculous, and I took the really long way around, but this is where I need to be. And so just kind of seeing, I think a theme for me is just God takes my dream, and he blows my dreams out of the water. And I tend to see that I have all these big, I love dreams. I'm a dreamer. I love that kind of thing, the imagination, creativity, the bigger, the better. And to have him always consistently blow me out of the water, you would think I would learn to stop putting my boundaries on him. And, but yeah, just really seeing him re-romance my heart and just kind of take me to a place that was a very real relationship. And this place kind of helped me get there. To realize that it's okay to get upset, even though I'm always wrong. There are times I still fight him tooth and nail, and that's just my personality, I guess. But during all of this, he actually gave me a story. So I was going to share it. I wrote this. It's not very good. It was just something that he kind of brought to me, and it's one of those, It's a fantasy, kind of a medieval story, because that's kind of my forte is in history. I love history. And so this is kind of where he took me. So I'm just going to read it, And so it starts, imagine this, a large village set back in medieval times. At the edge of the village, a large stone castle climbs into the sky, seeming to touch the clouds overhead. The colorful banners are blowing in the breeze. Stone and wood cottages line the busy dirt streets. And you can find all manners of shops, blacksmiths, dyers, tailors, shoemakers, glassblowers, candlestick makers. Their rickety wooden signs hang just outside their shops, hoping to entice the people to come in and browse and hopefully buy their wares. People hurry about, running errands, visiting friends, all lost in the everyday tasks that they have. The smells here are strong. Different meats are being cooked, the stench of the dye, the smells of all the animals lodged in the village along with the people. Farmers are out in their fields working the land, the baker's inside working with his flour and water. Now, imagine this. Just outside of this bustling village is a small, rundown shack. I mean, hardly standing on its last leg. Rundown. Outside is a mud hole where some pigs are bathing in the hot summer sun. Alongside these pigs is a woman, up to her knees in the mud with the pigs. They don't give her the time of day as they wallow away in their ignorant bliss. The woman's face is smeared with the mud, hiding her features from everyone, including herself. No one in the village speaks to her. She's filthy, unwanted. She never ventures into the village, knowing they would just drive her right back out to her pigs. At least the pigs didn't care what she smelled like. Over the hill, a large group of people came into view suddenly, causing her to look up. The royal banners were flying in the air over the heads as the soldiers riding in the group held them high. She can't believe it. It's the royal party. The prince himself rides among them. The women are beautiful, dressed in clothes finer than any that the woman had ever seen. The men equally as handsome. All of them are clean, polished upon their beautiful horses. As they draw closer, the pig woman watches in awe, trying to just catch a glimpse of the prince that she's heard so much about. She ducks behind one of her pigs when a clear, beautiful voice calls the whole group to stop. Her face pales. What did she do? Should she have lowered her eyes? She tries to sink deeper into the mud as the group parts. She's taken back as the most handsome man among them drops down from his horse and begins to walk towards her. She knows without any words needing to be said that this is the prince. She lowers her head, ashamed of her tattered, mud-stained clothes and face. What could he possibly want with her? The sound of sloshing through the mud reaches her ears, causing her to look up again. And her heart sinks when she sees the prince himself wading through the thick mud right towards her. She looks to his beautiful clothes getting stained and smeared with the same mud that is stained on her. And it breaks her heart to see him get so filthy. But nothing could have prepared her for what came next. The prince held out his hand to her with a smile and love in his eyes that made her heart skip a beat. Come with me, my love. The woman looks around, dumbfounded. Smiling, he says again, I won't harm you. She can feel the disapproving eyes of everyone else in the party staring down at her. She wonders, why on earth is the prince doing something like this to himself just for her? After some hesitation, she finally takes his hand, but quickly pulls away again, embarrassed by the mud under her fingernails and on her skin. He lifts her up into his arms, not seeming to care or notice that the others traveling with him are looking disapprovingly. His eyes are only for the woman in his arms. He smiles as he sets her on the back of his own horse, removes his royal cloak and drapes it around her, using his own handkerchief to wipe the mud from her face. He mounts the horse behind her with pride in his eyes and takes the reins, announcing to the group, this is the woman I love, that I have always loved. She will come with me, will live in my castle, and she is going to be my bride. She will no longer work with the pigs or be treated as such. All of it is forgotten. She smiles at her and kisses her cheek, tenderly. He doesn't seem to notice the mud on his own clothes. He urges his horse forward, completely ignoring the looks of the outrage and disdain from the women and men around him. The pig woman, however, sees every look and feels every stare. She looks back to the mud hole, but the prince gently turns her eyes back to him. It is all forgotten. You only need to look at me now. They travel back through the village. Some of the villagers cheer, not noticing her for fanfare, while others gawk, wondering who the filthy creature is on the horse with the prince. She's quickly distracted as the castle gates lower to allow them entry, and she is escorted into the beautiful rooms. Never in her whole life had she seen so much beauty. She couldn't have imagined something so grand to have even wanted it. The princess clothes her in his garments beyond any of the others she has ever seen in the riding party. Her hair is washed and fixed. Slowly, the mud is wiped away, leaving her clean and whole for the first time. She seems to glow from the inside. The next day, the prince begins teaching her what it means to be his bride and how to become his princess. Many of the lessons she fails at miserably. She knows it's just a matter of time before he throws her back into the mud. But he never once gets angry, nor does he even hint that he will ever take her back to where she came from. His eyes only radiate patience and even more love for her as each day passes. Every time she fails, he simply starts her lesson over again. The days pass, and the closer she grows to the prince, the more she feels unworthy of his affections. She can never be what he sees in her. She sees the look on the faces of the people in the castle. No one believes she should be there, and in a way, neither does she. The prince seems to know her without any mask. He makes her feel raw and vulnerable, but safe. Never once does he make her feel unloved, even though he saw the mud that was all over her and in her heart. She's grown to love him so much, and she knows he deserves only the best, something she is constantly reminded that she can never be. So, one night, the castle's fast asleep, she runs back to her mud hole. She cannot taint the prince with her filth anymore. No matter how much she learns, she still fails. He must see that. He must see that he deserves only the absolute best. Her heart is shattered, but she knows this is for his best. To her surprise, the next morning, the prince wades back into the mud beside her. She expects anger and exasperation, but the only thing on his face is the love that he feels for her, and maybe a little disappointment. He offers her his hand again. "Come home," is all he says. She hesitates, not sure what to feel. Why would he come back for her? Surely he knows that this is the best. Suddenly, she just flings herself into his arms, sobbing. "I don't deserve this. I don't deserve you. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry," she just repeats over and over again. His gentle voice caresses her like a spring breeze. "Shh, I love you. And you can run back here all you want. I won't force you to stay with me. But know this, I will always come for you and bring you home again. And if you won't come, then I'm going to wait right here until you are ready to." She loses herself in her words, knowing that no better love would she ever find again. She does return to the castle with her prince, knowing in her heart that she's going to fail again, but determined to do her best to become the princess that he deserves. She was ready to do whatever it took to be his bride. And I ended it with, "That's our prince. The pig woman is us. Our prince is willing to humble himself, come down off of the horse, wade into the thick mud where we are, and pick us up into his loving arms. He took our mud onto himself to clean it away from us and takes us home to his castle to teach us how to become his bride. What better love story could we want? Now the question we have to ask ourselves is this: are we ready to embrace our prince and allow him to show us to become the bride that he sees in us?" So that was just something that God kind of brought to my mind as I've been on this journey, and I am still a work in progress. It is one of those, I love people. I love listening to stories. I love sitting down there and listening to what inspires you, what pushes you forward, what makes you tick. And it's so cool to see God's reflection in each and every face that I see in here. And you guys have shown me a real God, a real love, and a very real relationship that I'm able to have. And it's one of those, as the story continues, I am so excited to see where it will go. It is not at all what I expect it to be, but it's so much better than I could have ever imagined to have even wanted it. And I want to encourage you to, I think I've made my prayer, God, don't give me you as I see you, but give me you as you are. And what greater love story could we want? Life is such an adventure. And it's so much fun. And I have so many more details that I could share. And if you guys are interested, by all means, find me. I love talking. I could talk forever. But yeah, it's just so cool to see how God has worked in me and is working in me. And I still fail. I fail a lot. But it is so cool. And I'm awestruck. And I'm so in love. And it's one of those, every day I'm like, okay, God, can't get better than this. And God goes, oh, yeah? Watch. And it's just, it's so awesome to see. And it's so awesome to be able to be the vessel And even though I'm a broken vessel, and I think it's in Japan, I think when a piece of pottery breaks, they fill it with gold. And that to me was just a symbol of what God does to us. Every time we break, like, he fills those cracks with gold and we become more beautiful for it. And every day God is fashioning us to be closer to his image and his likeness and his bride. And it's one of those, it's just so, so amazing to see the ways that he works. Our God's a creative God. And he just astounds me every day. And I encourage you to stop, pray, and see how you can be more real and more vulnerable with God. Because that just, there is no greater relationship that you could ever want or ask for. And is it hard? Yeah, it's hard. I would have to say ever since I read that book, the enemy has fought so hard. He tries to discourage you. He tries to pull you down. But in the end, God's got it. And it's just so cool to see. And it's so amazing to be a part of this body. I value this place so much more than I could ever say. As much as I love words, I can't find words for that. And I'm so blessed and humbled. And yeah, I'm going to start crying if I'm not careful. But yeah, I want to leave with the whole idea of stories. One of my favorite verses in the Bible is actually the very last verse of John. And I'll read the verse before it too. It says, "This is the disciple who is bearing witness about these things and who has written these things, and we know that his testimony is true. Now there are many other things that Jesus did. Were every one of them to be written, I suppose the world itself cannot contain the books that would be written." How cool are stories? God spoke in stories, and it's just so cool to me that he has gifted us with that opportunity to share our stories, because he's writing them too. And it's so cool to me to see, like, so much that he's done and to be able to share. And there's a reason that words are the sword. The word is the sword. And they're very powerful things, and it's really cool. And I hope that God has spoken to you through me. That was my biggest prayer, that I would get out of the way. I had he's up here with his notes, and I was just like, I have no idea what I'm talking about. We're just going to wing it. But yeah, so I just hope that, yeah, that God is speaking through me, that I continue to be the vessel. And if there's any way, I love praying for people. I love praying for people. If there's anything specific I could pray for anybody, let me know.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more information about Living Faith, check us online at livingfaithlancaster.org.